From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Amid an alarming decline in western Alaska chum salmon, scientists have pointed to warming ocean temperatures as a prime culprit. A newly published study sheds further light on the role climate change may play in the salmon crisis. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
For newly hatched western Alaska chum salmon, there is no time to waste when it comes to making their way to the open ocean. The tiny fry begin their journey just days or weeks after being born. When they finally reach the Bering Sea, sometime from mid-June to mid-July, their first priority becomes consuming marine prey and building the energy reserves that will carry them through their first winter. Throughout their years in the ocean, western Alaska chum travel extensively between the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska. Unfortunately, simultaneous warming trends in the Bering Sea and the Gulf appear to have come as a double whammy for western Alaska's juvenile chum salmon. A new study by scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game shows a possible link between a period of exceptionally warm ocean temperatures and chum crashes seen across western Alaska.
Loss of sea ice is having an impact on Bering Sea ecosystems, and so with warming, we're seeing a change in the food web.
That's Ed Farley, lead author of the study and a program manager with NOAA Fisheries Auk Bay Laboratories in Juneau.
That food web is less energetic. It's a poorer quality prey, and it's impacting juvenile salmon, especially juvenile chum salmon in the northern Bering Sea. It's impacting their fitness prior to winter.
By poorer quality prey, Farley means jellyfish, also known as cnidaria. They have been shown to proliferate when ocean temperatures warm.
There are more cnidaria in the ecosystem of the northern Bering Sea during warm years, but there was significantly more during this most recent anomalously warm period.
From 2017 to 2019, Bering Sea ice receded to record low levels thanks to persistent warm southerly winds. In addition to bringing lower quality prey, the study finds that a six-year period of warmer ocean temperatures in the Bering Sea that began in 2014 may have also increased the metabolic rates of chum, increasing their need to feed. While the chum grew in size, they remained poorly equipped for survival.
Even though they were large and they were relatively abundant, they had very little fat.
Farley says relative abundance of other juvenile salmon species in the Bering Sea, like Chinook or pink salmon, usually correlates to how many will eventually swim back upstream. But that wasn't the case with the lean chum observed in the study during the six-year warm period. Instead, record-low chum salmon returns have hit Alaska Native communities hard in recent years, especially those along the Yukon River. While the new study looks at the fitness of juvenile chum during their first summer in the Bering Sea, Farley and his colleagues have also looked into the fitness of juvenile chum wintering in the Gulf of Alaska. Farley says that waters in the Gulf were unusually cool in 2022.
We are seeing real differences in their energetic status and some of the other metrics that we're starting to look at now.
While cooler waters in the Gulf of Alaska may bode well for western Alaska chum salmon returns in the short term, Farley says long-term projections regarding ocean temperatures are less than rosy.
By 2040, you know, at least the climate model suggests that the Northern Bering Sea will not have sea ice in the winter. And so I think that what we have just witnessed is some of what may be occurring in the future.
Farley says it's hard to predict how ocean temperatures may change in the coming years.
It could be that it warms up in the Bering Sea, but the Gulf of Alaska stays okay, but it's hard to say. I think what this study does is it gives context to the impact of climate change and warming in these northern Arctic and subarctic ecosystems and the relative impact that that's going to have. And so it can be huge.
Farley says major recent advances in ocean modeling may provide a clearer look at chum migration patterns in the future, whatever way the temps trend. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Five environmental and tribal organizations have signed their support onto a lawsuit against federal fisheries managers. The suit alleges the National Marine Fisheries Service has violated environmental policies by using outdated data to guide the way it regulates the trawling industry in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Chain fisheries. This includes the Alaska pollock fishery, responsible for the vast majority of salmon bycatch in the region. Lorelei Ivanoff is the executive director of Native Peoples Action, one of the supporting organizations. She says trawling management decisions are based largely on environmental analyses nearly two decades old.
There are so many factors as to why salmon declines are where they're at right now in our rivers. We know it's not just the pollock industry. However, if the analysis and if the environmental impact statement that they use for analysis and for decision making was updated, there would be a more complete picture of what's happening in the ocean to base their decisions on.
The lawsuit was originally brought in April by the Association of Village Council Presidents and Tanana Chiefs Conference, tribal nonprofit organizations that together represent the vast majority of communities hit hardest by salmon crashes in western Alaska. The groups are being represented by the National Environmentalist Law Organization, Earth Justice. Earlier this month, five Alaska Native and Fisheries Conservation Organizations, Native Peoples Action, Ocean Conservancy, the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, Salmon State, and the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, filed what is known as an amicus brief on the same side as the original two plaintiffs. It's a way for those with a stake in the outcome of a lawsuit to offer additional information that courts may consider before ruling. Becca Robbins-Gisclair is Arctic Programs Director for Ocean Conservancy, another supporting organization. She says the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, the body that sets federal fishery management standards, needs to make a change to protect Western Alaska salmon runs.
Literally, as we speak, the council this week is about to make these same decisions again about setting catch limits for billions of pounds of groundfish to be removed from the Bering Sea. And they're doing it again without fully considering the impacts on the ecosystem, on subsistence fishing, on indigenous ways of life.
Earlier this year, the city of Bethel joined the lawsuit as an intervener, essentially a latecomer plaintiff. The city cited the cultural, nutritional, and economic importance of salmon to Bethel residents in their move to join the lawsuit. On the other side of the suit, the At Sea Processors Association and United Catcher Boats have become interveners in support of the National Marine Fisheries Service and maintaining the status quo. Both are trade associations representing the trawling industry. United Catcher Boats did not respond to requests for comment immediately. Both the At Sea Processors Association and the National Marine Fisheries Service say they are unable to comment on matters of litigation. And hats off once again to Evan Erickson of KYUK for that reporting.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
Trident Seafoods, one of the biggest seafood processors in the country, announced on Tuesday that it's selling a third of its Alaska plants. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, it's a huge move for the company amid a tumultuous seafood market.
Four of Trident's processing plants in Alaska are now for sale in Kodiak, Ketchikan, Petersburg, and False Pass. The company also announced a significantly scaled back winter season for their year-round plant in Kodiak. The historic Diamond NN Cannery in South Naknek and the company's support facilities in Chignik will either be retired or sold as well, according to the release. Multiple fishers contacted by KMXT said it was a huge surprise. Trident spokesperson Alexis Telford declined to comment, saying they're focused on their employees and fishing fleets at this time. The announcement comes on the heels of a reduced fall salmon fishing season across most of the state and just a month ahead of the opening of Kodiak's Tanner crab season, which is expected to be the second largest harvest for that species in decades. There's a storm of issues in seafood markets right now. Processors have offered fishers some of the lowest prices for their harvest in years, sparking stand-downs and protests across the state. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute's conference in November pointed to declining demand for seafood, huge harvests, and foreign competition as some of the key problems. In a press release, Trident blamed similar reasons for its move to sell. The company's cost-cutting efforts also include laying off about a tenth of its corporate staff. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.